Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography. Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian.
And I'm Hammond.
I changed it up. I said first name, didn't I? It's all right, whatever. I'm Brian Ibbett. That's better.
And I'm that other guy, Mr. Chamberlain.
There you go. Close enough. This week, we are back in punk. We're back hitting the old punk genre with a band that I've been a big fan, actually two bands, I should say, that I've been big fans of for a while and have never really taken the time to listen to the two bands back to back or really to listen to either one of their catalogs straight through. And very different experience. The bands are The Clash and Big Audio Dynamite. They're connected via one guy named Mick Jones. And we'll talk about where that change was that he left The Clash and formed BAD and what the impetus was for that and all that stuff. We'll talk about that later on in the show.
And to call back to a joke from last week, he was, in Brian's terms, the Clash Clown.
Clash Clown. Yep. Very good. Did I really say that?
No, you said he was the clown of the Clash. And I went, oh, so you're saying Clash Clown.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, I didn't think I'd made that joke. And
yeah, no.
I was going to twist my arm, patting myself on the back for that one.
Yeah, you fed me the line and then I made it work.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's talk about who the Clash were. We'll start with them. They were formed in England in 1976. They played a key role in the first wave of British punk rock. They were recognized for using a wide variety of musical influences, including reggae, funk, ska, and rockabilly. For most of their lifespan, the lineup was Mick Jones on vocals and guitar, Paul Simonon on bass, Nicky, or Topper Head-On, on drums, and Joe Strummer on guitars and also lead vocals.
So Nicky left the band in 82 and then internal friction, quote-unquote, caused Jones to leave the very next year.
Yeah, we'll just lay it out, man. Dude was fired.
Jones and Ozzy have a lot in common.
He totally was. Yeah, it's a lot of the reasons I think that he was fired, or at least reasons that were because of drug use, I assume. I mean, it was basically not making it to band practice, rehearsal, recording, stuff like that.
In my research, there were a number of references to people, you know, having heroin problems and stuff like that. I didn't really, again, I don't really want to focus on that with this show stuff, but I it was there and it wasn't just him. There were others too. So,
yeah. Now we've talked about how the, is it the Holy Trinity of heavy metal is Anthrax, Megadeth? No, what was the
Big Four? Big Four. Anthrax, okay. Megadeth, Metallica, and Slayer.
Okay. We'll talk about that next week. But I think there's a holy trinity of punk rock. And I think it's the Ramones, the Sex Pistols, and the Clash. I think that's your big three. I'm trying to think if there's a fourth that's up there as high as those three. But
so does that mean we have to do the Sex Pistols soon?
Well, at some point, maybe. I don't know. I'm not in any hurry after this week. Thank
you. Really, thank you. Thank you.
No, but it's funny. We were talking a little bit before the show about how, since doing the Ramones, you were expecting this was kind of going to be another Ramones. And the two are very, very different.
Yeah. I was expecting, it's funny because the only song, I mean, I knew the hits from The Clash, but I didn't know anything else.
Sure.
And
sure.
I came into this and I thoroughly enjoyed this punk experience more than I did the Ramones.
I did too. And it's not just the fact that I'm more of a Clash fan than I'm a Ramones fan, but there's a variety that you get with the Clash that I don't think you get with the Ramones. The Ramones were very good at one thing. They did it very, very well, but it was that one thing.
Yeah, they Ramoned very, very well.
But the Clash, man, they're all over the place. I mean, there are some reggae songs, there's ska, there's just straight up punk rock.
One of my songs in the playlist is so not punk, it's punk.
Yeah, right. I guess that's the thing, right? It's anti the establishment and they're antiing their own establishment by going against their own punk music.
But you mean, I was expecting the only other really, other than the Ramones and some Sex Pistols and things like that, I was familiar with the Dead Kennedys because I tried really hard to like them back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I found myself liking like one or two songs, but I couldn't get beyond them. I just, there was nothing for me there. Yeah. And I'd like to try it again. So that's another band we could put on the possibility list because now that I'm older and have a different view of music and consumership and listening, it might change. But I was kind of afraid this was going to be more in that vein. And the songs that I knew were the quirks and not the standard.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good point that a lot of their big hits are very different from the rest of the stuff you find on the album. And it's more, you know, it's not that they're saying, well, let's put out a different face onto our singles. It's just that the things that people tended to gravitate towards that were more widely accessible, I think were those more unusual tracks.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense. All right. So they formed in 1976. They disbanded 10 years later in 1986. Each member of The Clash had been busy in some part of the London music scene before The Clash was formed. Manager Bernard Rhodes organized the group of musicians after being inspired by seeing the Sex Pistols play. Speaking of the Pistols, the band made its debut in the summer of 1976. They were playing in support of the Sex Pistols. After that appearance, the band worked hard to improve their playing and write material. In August, they played with the Buzzcocks, who were also opening for the Sex Pistols.
Now, I don't know anything about the Buzzcocks other than the name.
You know the song, Ever Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have Fallen in Love With? Even if you don't think you know it, because if you've seen the movie, the first Shrek movie, you've heard that song.
I've never seen Shrek.
What?
I'm kidding. Okay.
I mean, that wasn't as big a what as the I've never seen The Big Lebowski or Trains, Planes, and Automobiles what, but that was a pretty big what.
No, I did. We own it. I know exactly what
I figured. You've got kids.
Yeah.
There's no way you skate through as a parent and are not treated to Shrek ad nauseum.
At one point, my daughter was yelling, eat me. Because of that movie, which we had to kind of curb that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I love what kids pick up from stuff like that. No, Buzzcocks actually would be a fun one to consider for the show as well, because I know one, maybe two or three songs, but they're a lot more, they're a lot less what I'd consider punk than the Pistols, the Ramones, and the Clash. I think they're more British new wave than...
Okay.
Than punk, so it'd be a consideration. An early dismissal from the original lineup of The Clash, Keith Levine would go on to form Public Image Limited.
Now, by law, you have to say it like they do in The Dead Milkmen, the You'll Dance to Anything.
Public Image Limited.
Okay, good.
And it's funny because I consider, speaking of the Sex Pistols, Johnny Lydon as the person who formed Public Image Limited, but I guess he did so with Keith Levine, which is interesting. A little cross development from The Clash and The Pistols. In 1977, they released their first album called The Clash. Because of the anti-establishment mentality of punk, the band had to justify their record deal to CBS.
Mark Perry, the founder of the magazine Sniff and Glue, which is the strangest title for a magazine ever.
Especially a magazine that's held together with staples.
Well, yeah. And I was going to say that if you do one, you can't read the other after a prolonged period of time.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
Anyway, he said that punk died the day The Clash signed with CBS.
Oh, so here already we've got the sellout, you know, the guy yelling sellout about a punk band signing a label. Listen, you do work. You got to get paid for your work. I don't care if you're against the man or whatever. There's, there's bills to get. There's lights to be kept on.
I think my favorite sellout kind of clap back was when Lars said, "Yeah, we sold out every arena in every country in every city we ever played."
Nice. I like that. Although the deal with CBS was really not that great, they had to pay for their on tours, recordings, remixes, and expenses, but they got the deal nonetheless. White Riot was the first single. The album came out the next month. Remote Control was the second single released.
Remote Control has gone on to be considered one of the great songs in punk music, which was weird because I hadn't heard it until this last week.
Yeah. No, it's not one you think of, right? You think of God Save the Queen. You think of the KKK took my baby away, or I want to be sedated.
Anarchy in the UK. I mean, there's lots of them that I think about before remote control.
Yeah, for sure. CBS didn't give it a US release, even though it charted well in the UK.
Yeah, they felt that it was too raw. It was too unproduced. It was just too rough to be marketable in the States.
I can see that. And that first album, very, you know, very similar to the Ramones in style. It's like the two of them had this one launching off point, and then the Clash just went into a completely different direction.
Well, I think they were, I felt like they were doing it, the Clash were doing it more because they were experimenting with, as musicians. And I think the Ramones were just doing it because they were having a good time.
Yeah.
It was a
yeah.
different mindset.
I think so. I think that's a very good point. I think the Pistols were doing it because they were just angry and mm-hmm. needed a vent. The last two singles released from the album were Clash City Rockers and White Man and Hammersmith Palais.
The later was a big surprise because of the reggae sound and arrangement to it.
Yeah, and wouldn't be so much of a surprise after listening to more Clash music that the reggae influence.
Yeah, but there. In 77, I think people probably went, what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. The next year, they released the album Give 'Em Enough Rope. CBS demanded a cleaner sound. This reportedly killed spontaneity and created a boring situation to record in.
I can tell if you're a punk band. And the man comes down and says, all right, we got to make this sound like more like your guys are a band recording in a studio, not like a group of hooligans in a garage. I'm sure everybody went, yeah, right.
Yeah, and this album, even in my opinion, is boring and flat. And I didn't have any, there were no standout tracks on Give 'Em Enough Rope for me. However, critics disagreed. It was well reviewed and it reached number 2 on the UK charts. The first single was Tommy Gun. In 1979, they released London Calling. This was a double album that mixed all of their influences and showed their incredible energy. It's considered one of the greatest rock albums ever recorded. Train in Vain was the first U.S. Top 40 single, and London Calling was released in the U.K. and reached number 11. By the way, Train in Vain, not originally intended for the album. It was recorded for New Musical Express, and it was so added so late in the game to the album that most of the albums you find out there don't even list it as a track. It's kind of a hidden bonus track at the end of the album. The album, by the way, London Calling, reached number 9 on the UK charts, number 27 in the US. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania. London calling, see we ain't got no swing except for the rain and the crunch of things. After that, the movie Rude Boy was made about a guy who left his job to roadie for the band. They hated it so much they had buttons made in protest when it premiered at the Berlin Film Festival and won honorable mention.
Yeah, this whole story was kind of strange. I threw it in because it was an interesting talking point. But this director came in, made a semi-documentary about the band and this guy, kind of with a storyline through it. And when they saw it, they hated it. They made these buttons in protest. They kind of spoke out against it. And then when it premiered in Berlin, of course, it does pretty well. So
yeah,
that's the way the protests crumble sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes the protests even add to the publicity, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. The Clash had wanted to release a single a month in 1980, but CBS didn't like that idea. Bank Robber was released in August before the December release of 1980's Sandinista. By the way, before we get off Bank Robber, great cover of Bank Robber by the band Chumbawamba, of all people.
Yeah,
Yes. Yeah.
See, bank robber and informer need to be played back to back.
I'm sure there's a whole set of music, a whole album you could do like that for sure. In 1980, yeah, the album Sandinista. This thing was a 3 LP, 36 song monster, and is one of my favorite albums of all time. Not just favorite Clash albums, but favorite albums.
I'm going to take issue. You have a song, you have an album now that's 3 LPs, 36 songs. And yeah. You say that some of the stuff I listen to is too long.
Yeah, because if you don't like a song, guess what? There's only 2 minutes of it. 2 minutes 59, according to their lyrics of Hitsville, UK. That's you knock out a song in 2 minutes 59, and then you're on to the next one. That's funny. It's funny because that song is so anti what Dream Theater does, whether it's good or not. I understand. I get what you're saying. The album covered a wide range of styles when you're talking about a 36 song album. Of course, it covers a wide range of styles, including a dip into the waters of early rap. And it was considered to be controversial, both in style and in content. The song This Is Radio Clash was released in 1981, ahead of 1982's Combat Rock. Radio Clash on pirate satellite, orbiting your living room, cashing in the Bill of Rights, human army surplus or refusing of the lights. This is Radio Clash on pirate satellite. The album was filled with strange songs that experimented with sound collage, spoken word, and radio-friendly tracks. Should I Stay or Should I Go was the first single. Then Rock the Casbah was released as the follow-up. I'll be here till the end of time, so you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. And without really saying anything new and surprising, this really was the band's highest charting album. Yeah, no surprise there. They'd built up a good amount of momentum, and this had some great radio-friendly tracks on it. The band started to fall apart after this album was released. Head-On was asked to leave because of a heroin addiction. With his departure, friction around the remaining members was seen. Jones was fired in the fall of 1983. Shortly after that, he formed General Public, but he left while they were recording their first album. I had no idea about that, by the way. I knew about Dave Wakeling and Rankin Roger for General Public, and it being kind of like a follow-up to the Specials and the English Beat. Had no idea that Mick Jones was involved with that. Totally crazy. By the way, we mentioned Topper Head-On leaving. He formed a band called Havana 3AM, and I almost added it to our lineup. I decided not to, just keep things very simple with following Mick Jones, basically. Mm-hmm. But Havana 3AM released one album, self-titled album. It's worth checking out. This might even make it as a you got to listen to this at some point, because It's not very Clash. It's more like, I don't know, it's almost more like music that you'd hear alongside a Quentin Tarantino film. I don't know. Maybe not. But it is worth listening to. Mick Jones, after a short time with General Public, formed a group called Top Rick Action Company. He brought in Leo Williams to play bass, John Leonard to play sax, Nikki Head-On, Topper, for drums. Who was quickly let go, though, because of his ongoing drug issues. Then Leonard left, and nothing ever got released, but the demos were seen as the front runner for the band Big Audio Dynamite. 1985, we got what was the last Clash album, Cut the Crap. Appropriate. The sessions were chaotic, and it totally feels like it. The songs feel like demo songs, very unfinished. The music was mostly played by session musicians. This Is England was the first single. Didn't go very well at first, but has gained appreciation over time. And the band officially broke up in early 1986.
Yeah, this album really could have been called This Album Is
Crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's a bummer too, because you want, when you're as monumental and iconic as The Clash, you want to go out in a blaze of glory. You don't want to have your last album kind of be a whimpering mess.
Yeah, but I mean, with the kind of stuff this band was, what they represented, having it kind of blow up there at the end makes kind of sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sad sense.
I guess it would be the appropriate way to end a band like The Clash, with a clash and then a crash.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. After the breakup, Jones went and formed Big Audio Dynamite. The band consisted of Don Letts, Leo Williams, Greg Roberts, and Dan Donovan. Their first album, appropriately titled This Is Big Audio Dynamite, came out in 1985. It reached number 27 on the UK charts and 103 on the Billboard charts in the US. The singles were The Bottom Line, E equals MC2, and Medicine Show. All right, I have a very short but interesting, I don't know if it's interesting, short but, well, I have a short story to tell you about The Bottom Line. So a guy that I was living with, his name is David, before I married Tina. This is a college roommate, a guy named Dave Collins, and his girlfriend, Michelle, who eventually moved in with the two of us, and then they moved off and got married. She was, all three of us were at the Colorado Institute of Art. He and I, David and I, were in the visual communications section, and Michelle was in the fashion design program there. And so she was doing like these runway modeling kind of thing. She's a very attractive, tall, attractive woman. So in addition to designing clothing, she was also wearing those things for like catwalks and runway and stuff like that. Just you know, local small shows that the school was associated with. And they were always pulling, you know, music. And every once in a while, Dave and I would go to one of her fashion shows. And I think this might be the first Big Audio Dynamite song I'd ever heard, but they started playing The Bottom Line to kick off this fashion show. And so you've got the whole like, the drums start kicking in, and then the women start coming out down the runway, and then you hear, the horses are on the track. which seemed like somebody had listened to the first few seconds of The Bottom Line and decided, oh yeah, this will be a good one to open with without listening to the rest of the song. But it just seemed like a really bizarre way to kick off a fashion show. So anytime I hear this song, that's all I can think. They followed that album up with number 10 Upping Street in 1986, a parody of number 10 Downing Street, home of the Prime Minister. This song, Mick Jones reunite with Joe Strummer, who is credited with co-producing and co-writing 5 to 9 tracks, which is amazing because I thought that the rift had gone so big between the two of them.
That's 5 of the 9 tracks.
Oh, 5 of the 9 tracks. Yeah. Okay. I wasn't even sure if you meant like co-writing tracks 5 through 9.
No, it was 5 of the 9.
5 of the 9 tracks. Yeah, I thought those two weren't even talking to each other, let alone working together anymore. So that's a really cool thing to see. 1988, Tighten Up Volume 88 came out for Big Audio Dynamite. This one peaked at number 33 on the UK charts and number 102 on the US charts. Strummer again was involved in the producing and writing of the album. Just Play Music and Other 99 were released as singles. In 1989, Megatop Phoenix was released. This was the last Big Audio Dynamite released until 1995's F-Punk. Why? Because Big Audio Dynamite 2 took their place and had a completely different lineup. The Phoenix is a reference to a near-death experience that Jones had while fighting chickenpox and pneumonia. during that time.
Having chicken pox as an adult blows. I'm totally throwing that out there. As someone who had it at almost 20, it's the worst experience I've ever had. So
I'm sure.
I definitely understand how he felt like he was dying, especially when he had pneumonia on top of it.
God, the two of them at the same time. Yeah, I was so young when I had chicken pox, I don't even remember it. So thank goodness for that. Yeah. James Brown and Contact were released as singles from this album. I forget how great a song Contact is until it came up and I'm like, oh, I love this song. And it feels like a new wave song. It's not punk. It's like a great Plimsoll song or something. In 1990, they released the album Kool-Aid. This was a UK-only release, and several songs from Kool-Aid would end up on the next album. The initial recording of the song that would become Rush, Change of Atmosphere, or the song called Change of Atmosphere, led off this album. Trouser Press said that, quote, with a relatively loose feel and concept, Kool-Aid is Jones' most diverse outing ever. A limited edition 8-song stopgap offering 2 acoustic ballads, acid dance, techno rock, Kraftwerk samples, and even Laurie Anderson-style Poltergeist vocals, as well as a remixed and retitled version of Free, the band's contribution to the Flashback soundtrack.
Flashback.
Crazy.
Flashback. What movie is that? Is that that's Free Jack that had what's Flashback?
I don't know Flashback. I was thinking it's not the one with Jennifer Beals dancing.
Yeah, that's Flashback.
For the life. Yeah.
There's Free Jack.
Was Flashback, there was like a drug movie, like a Cheech and Chong. Okay, I'm partially remembering it. It's not Cheech and Chong, but it was a drug movie with Dennis Hopper and Kiefer Sutherland that was acid trips and stuff like that as part of this. Yeah.
I'll have to another go back slash to, point.
Right. And point blank. I don't know where we're going with all this. 1991, they released the album The Globe. This, like I said, took some stuff from Kool-Aid. Some CD versions of this release came with a bonus live album called Ali Pali Paradiso. And this contained the big, 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 big Audio Dynamite 2 hit, Rush.
I never understood why that song was so popular. It's kind of silly. It's kind of nonsensical. Yeah. It doesn't carry through anything.
Right.
And when you actually try to listen to the words, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And it's so all over the place with styles. Like halfway through the song, you get a little spoken word break that changes up the drum beat and the melody for like a minute, and then goes into the second verse. It's really crazy. But
and if you told me in 1991 that one of the guys involved with this had been in The Clash, I would have called you a liar, because there is no way this wasn't some one-off dance song by a group that was put together in a studio just to crank out dance hits.
Yeah, totally. Around this time, maybe around 1992, 1993, so this album had come out, and I immediately gravitated towards it. Loved the whole album. What's that? Oh, I'm hearing a weird echo on my side of things. There we go. Looks like it's figured itself out. So around this time, Tina and I went on a trip to the Northeast to see my dad and stepmom, who were living in Connecticut at the time. And then we were going to go from there to North Carolina and kind of make it a three-legged trip.
This is the Posies trip?
This was the Posies trip, yes, as a matter of fact. This was another one of those albums that I had on that train ride and listened to nonstop from New York Grand Central Station to Charlotte, North Carolina. staring out the window. The Globe and Deer 23, man, those were those were awesome for that trip. And again, something that I'll always connect with that trip. Good memory, by the way.
This felt like it was more toward Information Society than the Clash.
For sure.
Ask me to where this came from, what kind of musical background it came from, I would be thinking way more Information Society than
alt pop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, way more so than punk, for sure.
Yeah,
definitely. All right, so that was 1991. 1994, they released Higher Power, still as Big Audio Dynamite 2. Looking for a Song was the only single released from this album, and this was an LP release. It's, eh. You know, they never, for me, they never got as high as they did with the Globe, in my opinion, in quality and listenability. These later albums just didn't do it for me. In 1995, they released the album F-Punk. This was a return to the Big Audio Dynamite name. The name is a parody of P-Funk and implies F-Punk. So P-Funk, like Parliament Funkadelic and the All-Stars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, George Clinton. Yeah. The album cover borrows that same style, that same black and white photograph style of London Calling.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a funny parody of themselves or himself with that. It's if you hold them up next to each other, look at them next to each other, it's actually a pretty funny self.
Right. Yeah, with the green letters going down and the red letters across. By the way, that the photo, we didn't even talk about that photo on the cover of London Calling. That is Joe Simon and smashing his bass guitar. And aside from the fact that it's a photograph that just basically says, this right here is punk rock. Mm-hmm. It's also a... it's funny, the story behind it is that he was pissed off because the venue they were recording in, or they were playing in, wouldn't allow the audience to stand up during the music. Apparently, they were forced, the audience was forced to sit down and stay seated for the whole concert. And when Joe Simon found that out, he got really pissed off. And
so were they playing in Salt Lake?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I wonder where where it was. But the that cover, by the way, is a parody in and of itself of the Elvis Presley album that had the pink letters down and the green letters across, that same style. So many parodies. It's like the snake is eating itself or something. I don't know. The last album, Big Audio Dynamite's Entering a New Ride, came out in 1997, is actually a downloadable album released for free after a disagreement with the record label. Stands as one of the earliest internet distributed albums. And both Hammond and I... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and even though that was the case, it's now really hard to find.
Impossible, yeah. Did a little search before the show and no luck finding that one.
So. Come on, Brian. We did it during the show. We just cut it out. Right,
we did it during the show. We did it just a second ago. Wow, way to tell people how the sausage is made, Hammond.
Well, you know what? We're all about being honest here. Let's roll it out.
Yeah, we're all about being honest. Can we find a bootleg of this album somewhere online? Maybe not. Maybe honest with an asterisk.
It was free, so it wasn't like it's a bootleg. No,
exactly. I know, which is really...
It'd be weird if you had to pay for it.
It is a bummer, right? Because you'd think that, all right, if you've offered it for free, now where could we get it? Give it to us.
You'd think it'd be everywhere.
You'd think. Maybe it wasn't that good. In 2010, there was talk of a reunion. Mick Jones is working with Gorillaz, so the timing for that is rough. A UK tour was confirmed in early 2011. It was a 9-date tour that was very well received.
So I didn't know he was working with Gorillaz either. Did you?
I didn't know that either. I knew about Damon Albarn, but had no idea that Mick Jones was working with Gorillaz. Again, the guy has had his involvement with so many other things besides Big Audio Dynamite. The general public had no idea about and Gorillaz, but it's cool. Those are great things. Those are great things to be involved with, really. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Hammond, tell us some statistics and general notes about the bands.
So Strummer died in 2002 of a heart condition. Mm-hmm. The Clash was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in March of 2003. And in 2013, a 12-discs box set of Clash music called Sound System was released. It contained all the albums, all the demos, all the unreleased stuff, and a DVD with unseen footage and promo videos.
Wow, that's cool.
And if I were even close to a Clash fan, I would want this.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is $150. If you can find a copy of it, I guess there's a few left in stock at Amazon. But man, what a great setup. And it's, you know, like we were just saying, it's like each of the albums, but then like a whole bunch of extra tracks from the albums. It looks like a big inflatable cigarette and
a boombox.
And the whole thing comes in a boombox. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Just looking at all the other stuff that comes with this, posters and stickers.
A rude boy button, maybe.
Right. And it's funny because Sandinista, the Sandinista album that you can, you know, like the CD you buy, fits all 36 tracks on one CD, oddly enough, strangely enough. But this one, they've got it broken out into three CDs.
Welcome to the world of compression.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. Probably sounds better on this set, but look at all this stuff you get in this $150 box. Pretty cool.
You're flirting with this idea, Brian, aren't you?
What, buying it?
Uh-huh.
I'm flirting with the idea of spending $80 and getting the MP3s and not getting the all of the extra stuff that it's like, I'll take out of the box, I'll look at, I'll say, wow, this is really cool. And then I'll put it all back in the box, put it on the shelf and never look at it again. And then have to move it when, you know, when we move houses or something. I've learned my lesson. All right. So now let's talk about the Stairway to Heaven song. So really we've got two bands here we're talking about, Big Audio Dynamite and The Clash. So we've got a separate Stairway to Heaven song for each. Let's start with...
Okay, yeah. Well, I was going to say, Big Audio Dynamite's easy. It's going to be Rush. It's going to be Rush. If it's not Rush, so. Yeah.
Let's look at that really quick while...
Okay.
Because I have to do two separate searches anyway. Artist statistics. No, oddly enough, Rush is... Oh, I take that back. Oh, this is going to be a pain in the butt. So E equals MC squared is the most played song by Big Audio Dynamite. But now let's look at Big Audio Dynamite 2. Because that's going to be a whole different set of statistics. Yeah, Rush is the number one song there. But of the five concerts that they have listed on setlist.fm, Rush was played at all five. And then E equals MC squared was played at four of the five. So so there's a switch. By the way, 1999 covered by Big Audio Dynamite 2. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
All right, now let's talk about The Clash. This one's a little bit tougher because you've got, you know, 10 years of music. But you've got their hits really coming late in their biggest hits coming late in their career. I mean, it could be because, you know, there had to be so much touring that they were doing at the very beginning, right?
Yeah. So I'm thinking that White Riot probably is in the running. Remote Control is probably in the running. But I'm leaning more toward like Rock the Casbah, London Calling.
I would lean toward London.
Should I go?
I would say London Calling just because it's got that combination of being a massive hit for them and being just 2 years into their catalog or 3 years into their catalog before Rock the Casbah and Radio Clash and stuff like that. So let's take a look. The Clash, artist statistics. Yeah, tons of performances from them. Both wrong. Although London Calling was number two. Janie Jones, number one, with 233 performances of Janie Jones. That's an interesting one because that was not even on our radar. London Calling number two, Guns of Brixton, Police and Thieves, a cover of the Junior Mervin reggae song, Clampdown, Brand New Cadillac, a cover of Vince Taylor and his Playboys, Safe European Home, of course, I Fought the Law, White Man and Hammersmith Palais, Complete Control, and Garage Land, rounding up the top 11 or 12. Looking to see where Rock the Casbah, 26th on the list. Should I Stare? Should I Go? 30th on the list. Those just came out so late that they, you know, I'm sure they did them in every concert after they released them, but they did so many concerts in those first few years that no way to keep up with all that.
Yeah.
They're very cool though. Seeing Janie Jones, like, would not have expected Janie Jones. Let's talk about covers, since we kind of touched on them here. Who would we like to hear them cover? I'll start. And we've talked about a lot about how they've done a few covers. And a lot of the covers, things like Junko Partner and Police and Thieves, are reggae songs. I have another reggae song that I think they would have covered, or they could have covered really, really well. It's a tongue-in-cheek kind of goofball novelty song cover, or song by 10cc, Dreadlock Holiday. And if you're not familiar with it under that name, you might know it as the song where he goes, I don't like reggae, I love it. I could see that being something that they would cover. Plus, I've been getting into a lot of 10cc lately, so that would kind of sparked ahead.
Maybe I'm being a little twisted, but my choice is Eye in the Sky by Alan Parsons.
Mm. Wow.
And I really feel like this could work for either band. I feel like The Clash could punk it up and kind of rock it up, especially because it's kind of a mid-tempo standard thing, and they could make it seem more like government's watching you, paranoia, because of their whole political leanings. Or you could lean it the other direction, more electronic produced, kind of break it up and do some more modern day techie things with it and flip it around and have it be Big Audio Dynamite.
That would be cool. That would be really cool. And that would be a great crossover too, right? I like that. You know, it's funny that there weren't songs that Mick Jones did with both bands, but different styles, kind of like what Eric Clapton did with Layla, with Derek and the Dominoes, and then separately when he went solo.
So are you, my first guess is there was probably some legal stuff involved with that.
Well, you think so. But we'll talk about this more in my playlist. But The Globe, from the title track from the Big Audio Dynamite 2 album, basically uses Should I Stare, Should I Go as all of its music, just chopped up.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But as far as like note for note, like writing maybe. Stuff, I'm wondering if maybe the music he could use but not the lyrics.
Yeah, totally could be. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about our playlist. This is where we pick a few songs that you would add to their greatest hits album to make a brand new collection that focuses on the popular tunes as well as the deep cuts. I'll start off, as I always do. This first one is from that Sandinista album. The whole album is just great. Great through line. Ivan meets G.I. Joe and the Magnificent Seven. Junko Partner is on there. Hitsville, UK is the song I'm picking from that one because it's a song about the music industry in general and how it's only a hit if they can keep it under 2 minutes and 59 seconds. And the beat itself, I say it borrows heavily from Walking on Sunshine. That came out afterwards, obviously. But but it's got that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And you just expect to hear Katrina and the Waves start chiming in about Walking on Sunshine. What's cool about this is a few years ago, Katrina Leskinich, the lead singer of Katrina and the Waves, ended up recording a cover of Hitsville, UK for a track-by-track cover album of Sandinista. And I felt like it was such great poetic, you know, the circle is complete kind of thing. Love that.
Yeah.
My second one, well, apparently the most popular song that Big Audio Dynamite 1 performed in concert, E equals MC squared. From the album, this is Big Audio Dynamite. What I like about this is what I like about a specific collection of songs out there, songs that sound like lists, like Love is a Rock, But the Radio Rolled Me, 88 Lines About 44 Women, People Who Died by Jim Carroll. I love songs that are lists. I don't know why. And for whatever reason. Oh, there's a great one that I have to make.
There's an OCD diagnosis in there somewhere for you. There's an OCD diagnosis easily in there for you somewhere.
There has to be. There's a song at some point I've got to play for you called Lions After Slumber by Skritti Politti, before they went mainstream. And it's almost like he's looking around the room, naming the things that he's seeing as he's writing the song, but every alternate thing that he names is like some emotion or character trait or character flaw. So it's like my Kleenex and my insecurity, my speakers and my hopelessness, you know, stuff like that. Is like, it's such a great song for that one reason. It just is so bizarre and listy. It's a listicle. I mentioned The Globe from The Globe album by Big Audio Dynamite 2. Axis spins around and round we go. Where we're going, no one really knows. Here we go. Feel the fire way down below. Yeah, I mean, the song basically uses that whole wow sound, that screamy sound at the beginning of Should I Stay or Should I Go, constantly. And integrates it with music, with new lyrics and rap. And
so the best part about that whole description was I got a new text tone for you just now.
Going, ah! That one, yeah, great.
Yep,
I just gave you a better one. Number four is from London Calling. It's Death or Glory. The Clash feels like that Venn diagram. If you've got Big Audio Dynamite and The Clash as the two circles, Death or Glory feels like it's right there in the center of that Venn diagram. It's got Joe Strummer and Mick Jones doing duet vocals, mm-hmm. the punk sensibilities of The Clash, and the Big Audio Dynamite beat and major chord. And it just feels like it's the segue that goes very perfectly between those two bands. Also from The Globe, Innocent Child. This one uses, you know, if Should I Stare, Should I Go appears in The Globe, Innocent Child uses the bottom line as its foundation. And it's about, like, the lyrics, from what I can tell, are about looking at somebody who's just a major villain, a major bad guy. But you'd love to know what they were like as a child. Like, you know, was there any of that stuff when you're out there playing on the swings at recess and hanging out with your friends? Chances are no. It was like a total different person that you were back then. I would have liked to have seen what you were like as a child. It's kind of cool. It's never too late. And then because it was a bonus track on London Calling, a hidden bonus track, I decided to include it here. Yeah, it's a greatest hit. I don't care. Train in Vain or Stand By Me from London Calling. I just love that song. And Too Much Joy, the band Too Much Joy, does a great cover of it. It's a song that really connects with me.
kind of a bonus track.
Yeah, I didn't add it until I realized I needed something and couldn't make Train in Vain my only, my greatest hit song. I had to have something in there to make it my sixth.
Yeah. So I didn't put a lot of notes down because most of these just hit me as I like them. I mean, it was weird. There was not anything I could say that was criticizing or kind of touching. There was just a few little notes about a couple of them, but more than anything, I just enjoyed listening to this week. I don't know if it was because we had so much Ozzy for the month before this, but this was a very good, almost a palate cleanser leading out of Ozzy.
Yeah, totally. I could see that.
Especially the back half where we're in the Big Audio Dynamite, because it's just all kind of fun. There's nothing oppressive or you know, anxiety inducing about it. It's just good, fun stuff. And you find yourself dancing to it or tapping your fingers to it without even really knowing that you're doing
it.
So the first one I picked was Kool-Aid from Big Audio Dynamite 2. And it was one of those ones that when I heard it, I just put it on the list because I'd remembered hearing it when I was younger and remembered liking it. So I threw it on there just because of that feeling of oh yeah, it's this one. I remember this one. And then I picked Brand New Cadillac from London Calling. I did that one because it was more of one of those songs that when I heard the bass line to it and how it started, that it grabbed me. It took a hold of me and said, hey, you're going to listen to this one. You're going to kind of pay attention.
And it's such a classic rocker too. Like it could be a Stray Cats tune, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. There is a rockabilly sensibility to it. I can't believe I just said those two words back to back.
Rockabilly sensibility. I can't even say those two words back to back.
And then I picked Rock the Casbah. Now, if Brian's looking at the notes, he can see it. It says, I don't care.
Yes.
It was a gateway into punk for me. This was probably the first song that was punk that I listened to. And I thought, if this was what punk is, I'm down.
Son.
And then I realized it was the anomaly for punk and realized that I needed to be a little more conscientious in my punk world as a kid.
Boy, do I remember that video too.
It was nonstop on early MTV.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
In fact, I actually thought they weren't from like an English speaking band because of how politically motivated the video was.
Sure.
Then I picked Stone Thames. I don't know. Thames.
It's Thames. It's the river.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. I just.
It's one of those things. Well, it's one of those things that I never know. Like, do you pronounce the thing in the dialect or with the accent of the country that it's in? Like, there's the city in northern or northeastern Australia that's Cairns. And you and I would pronounce that Cairns. But in Australia, it's pronounced Cairns. And I never know if you're supposed to pronounce it like the locals would pronounce it. With their accent, and if that's the case, then am I going to Mississippi or am I?
So this is completely unrelated to any of this, but it's a similar story. You can tell you've been in Hawaii too long when you look at the word footpath and want to call it foot path instead of footpath.
Like there's a little apostrophe.
Because two vowels next to each other, you do the little
That's a
and never forget the day that I looked at and said, "What's a foot path?"
That's really funny.
Now where did it start? Stone the Thames. Back to that one.
Yeah.
Stone the Thames, I enjoyed it because, again, it's Big Audio Dynamite having a good time. And it felt like this one was kind of very self-referential because of the way it was set up and what they were singing about. So I don't know. I just enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And the last one I picked was Straight to Hell. I loved this one because it was so far from punk that they made it even more punk. How's about a British jig and reel? Speaking King's English in quotation. As railhead towns feel the steel mills rust. This was almost like a slow dance song. I don't even know how to describe it. It was just not anything that you'd think the Clash would ever do. And then there they are doing it very, very well.
Yeah. And that, some great covers on that. I'll have to hook you up with a few, but, the music for that, at least that opening is used by, Mia for that song Paper Planes from, Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, okay.
All I want to do is and check and take your money. You know the song I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
Now you have another ringtone.
We could actually sell that on the Patreon as a brand new ringtone sound pack. You could go back through all 80, oh, 85. Geez,
yeah, weird noises. Great.
Yeah,
well, weird I don't text anybody, so that's fine. Use it as my ringtone, people. Whatever you want with it. That's funny.
I could use it as a text tone, too. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great song. And I guess that wraps up our playlists. There's 11 songs right there to add to your greatest hits collection, although you'll probably find a couple of those. You'll find Rock the Casbah and Train in Vain on the greatest hits. So really, we're giving you 9 extra songs to add to your list. But whatever, you know, it's fine.
Our show, we can break the rules if we want to.
It's our show, damn it.
I'm surprised that we hold to the rules as much as we do, to be honest with you.
I know, right? Because we could just break them anytime we want.
Yeah.
Our next episode, back to the bowels of heavy metal with us, something like that, to Anthrax, which is cool.
There's a lot of punk influences with these guys too, though. It's not a large step.
I don't think I could name any regular original Anthrax songs.
You've never heard of I'm the Man?
I may have, but I don't connect it with Anthrax.
I'm the Man is awesome.
I do know that they released a great album in 2013 that was all covers, and that's the only Anthrax I own. But I'm excited to check them out.
I'm nervous because there are periods of Anthrax life that I love.
Yeah.
And periods of Anthrax life that I don't love a lot.
Ooh, really? Okay. That makes me nervous. Yeah. How many albums are we talking about here?
23.
Wow. Really? 23 albums?
Yeah.
All right. Great. Oh boy.
I mean, there's some live stuff in my list. So, and got a Coverties and Rarity. I got an EP called Armed and Dangerous. We got I'm the Man. Music of Mass Destruction.
Wow.
Persistence of Time's a good album.
Okay. All right.
Sound of White Noise, Spreading the Disease.
Whew. Okay. Well, this will be fun. 23 albums.
Stomp 442.
Well, I guess 23, but some of those, as you're saying, are live albums.
Yeah. You'll text me midway through the week and go, you know what? Do we have to do them?
I'm showing 11 studio albums. And so I'm going to start with this, but
I've got live and
compilations stuff. And stuff mixed in. That's totally fine. I'll sprinkle those throughout. Holy cow. Well, this will be fun.
But definitely listen to the I'm the Man EP. Cause I'm that's my favorite thing they ever
did. I'm going to text you halfway through the week and say, I'd rather, contract Anthrax, or I'd rather get Anthrax than listen to another Anthrax album. This will be fun. All right. So that's coming up next week. Can't wait. If you want to get in touch with us, email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We say lots of things at the Soundography is where you'll do that, or visit our website.
Should we also throw out our personal Twitter? Because we do say lots of things, but mostly on our own Twitter pages.
Yeah, I'm at Coverville.
And I am at J. Hammond C.
There you go. Our website is soundography.com. That's got a record of all the shows we've ever done. Every episode, you can go back and listen to them. Willy-nilly is the best way to do that. Each episode contains the show notes, which have the playlists, links to where you can listen to the music on Spotify, links to where you can buy the songs, a link to our Patreon. If you want to support the show, hey, the season break is coming, and now is a very good time to get in there and do a you gotta listen to this album. We have that now as a Patreon level, so it's not just going to be, you know, podcasting luminaries like Scott Johnson and Justin Robert Young doing those. You can do one as well. Check out all that information at patreon.com/coverville. Of course, leave us a review anywhere you get your podcasts. Always helps other people discover the show. We love getting your reviews and your comments.
Hey, Brian, it's Soundography, not Coverville.
Did I say patreon.com/coverville?
You did.
Well, throw some money there while you're at it, but really... But really, you should go to patreon.com/soundography. Don't edit that out either. That's hilarious.
Okay.
Leave your reviews for my memory and ability to do multiple shows without cross-pollinating them. Wherever you get your podcasts, at iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or any of those. All right. That's going to do it. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brandon Bitt saying thank you for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
The show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.